So we were interested in how your family and friends respond to the photographs of themselves, and whether they like them or whether sometimes they find them like intrusive or something like that.
First of all, where does this, are you transcribing, I mean, are you recording this? Where does this go? This depends on how much truth I tell or not.
We do some creative editing. Ultimately, we'd love to put it as a broadcast.
Too bad.
Just give me a nod. And
I'll try to sort of smooth over. Well, let's put it this way. First of all, to start from the beginning, how I began, I don't want to take too much time up, but when I first started photographing, I had a 4x5 camera. That was in 1981. Nobody had really seen that kind of camera. Most people thought I was crazy, and trying to draw attention. There I was, killing myself, dragging this thing out of my station wagon. So most of the time, I think that they felt that they were, oh God, here she comes again, kind of thing. What the one family in this book, and the reason the results of this family are so good, is they got it. They understood what I was doing. They knew what a 4x5 is. They were up on who the contemporary photographers of that time were. At the same time, they didn't pose on purpose. They enjoyed the results. My sister still probably to this day just has absolutely no interest, really. My brother started having interest when my work started getting in museums. most people barely asked to see the results. And I want to tell you, that's this first project. That was so much easier than my work becoming well-known. People started to pose for the sake of posing. When I went to Europe, because I didn't know those people personally, I would have to go make prints, give them the prints. So for my family and friends, that was your original question, right? In the beginning, in this book, luckily, they were just not interested. And that's the best deal you can get. It's a big waste of time when they start to get interested. And in the results, you know, there's a movie that a woman named J.C. Juddelson made on me that was on Sundance. Did you know about this fabulous Sundance week that was on television? Did you get to... Oh, because you should have those here somehow or record them. But that film was on Sundance that week. I answer a lot of those questions. But one of my friends in this book that I photographed a lot, named Sheila, admitted something that I never even knew before, is that one of the pictures called Sheila in the Garden, she just put on brand new white pants, and it was like I sort of was torturing her. She said, I took a long time. I didn't think I took a long time. The picture was probably the first most revealing picture I've taken, and I was scared to show it to her, but luckily, all the people in this book are not vain people, and that's something that I still kind of request today, and that's what made it so easy, and I think they really didn't care how they looked. So that's the answer, I think. I can go on and on, but that's the shortest answer to that I can give.
So how does the diary that you have in this book, right, really work in the connection of your pictures?
That diary was very haphazard. I never thought it would be published. I don't know why I even wrote it. I'm not a writer. I don't think about things. But the man who edited this book and put it together, a man named Walter Keller, who was started Scalo, which no longer exists. It was his idea that this book be very personal, and that's why there's so many pictures of me. I would have never done that. And that was his intention, that it would be very natural, very approachable, very believable. And so I wrote those things down just for myself. Mm-hmm. I never meant to match them or put them together.
So would you say that, like, all your other pictures wouldn't have anything to do with an aspect of the diary or any diary at all?
You know, I can't really remember what's in there, and it's so long ago. I started thinking, you know, first of all, in the 70s, when you weren't even born, and that was sort of the beginning of photography, people were just thinking so hard. I mean, people thought and thought about what they were doing till your brain hurt. They would write, and it was just like so angst-ridden. And so it sort of was the thing to do, to write and match what you were thinking, and that you know, and I was a student, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept thinking that I had to sort of explain every single thing I did. Well, as time went by and as I started showing my work and people liking them, I thought less and less about what I was doing. I had to think so hard about physically just getting out there and having the strength to do what I was doing because of that camera. And then I started using lights, and I did it all myself. It was just to physically get there and do it that that's all I really thought about.
Mm-hmm.
Probably what I said in there rings true to today. I can hardly remember what was in there.
What message are you trying to convey? Like, using 8x10, there are a lot of, like, connotations with that. What are you trying to show in your photos?
That's too big a question, really, to answer, because I hope that this book answers that question and the European answers that question. Europeans, are you coming to the talk? Tonight?
No, I have class.
Oh, well, 1 hour's talk would answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
The movie would answer your question. I'll just try to make this as brief as I can. And the book, what's written in the book, I think, really says that. I started off in the very beginning of this book, and I was 28 years old, thinking that the American family was disintegrating. 28. I know you're not that old. But 28 is pretty young, but I had an 8-year-old son at 28 and a 6-year-old son. I also moved to a ski resort from New York City, and that's when I started making these pictures. And when I started making these pictures was the time of, Woodstock, the time of hippies, smoking dope, letting your hair down, taking your clothes off. And moving to that ski resort in the West Coast made me think about life in a different way than if I had stayed in New York City in a very kind of rigid, formal way. So, to go back again, I had left my home in New England to go to this ski resort, and I was homesick, and I thought about New England and the East Coast, even though I wasn't born in New England, and thought about how precious it was to me to have this, to live in this old house that had such history in it, and to keep that old house and to keep things the way that they have been for generations is not an easy thing to do. So I started making these pictures about the house and the home and the family inside those houses and how keeping up that house tended to keep the family together so that the house would be kept for generations to come. I then started thinking about the fact that I thought American families weren't close enough, physically close enough, didn't show enough affection. My father died, dropped dead when I was 14 years old, and I think that was enough of a shock to make me realize that you better well damn appreciate who's sitting around next to you, because they could be gone in about 5 minutes. And then it's too late to tell them that you love them or to be close to them or to put your arm around their shoulders, etc. So this comes from that, too. So I started directing the family members, my sister, her daughter, to be closer together, to show that they were closer together. I tried to do that by making the compositions in a certain way, which I learned from studying Italian Renaissancean paintings and Dutch 17th century paintings. I just happened to turn to this. This is lucky. This picture, and this is back with a 35mm Pentax. This is the first time I think I actually directed someone in the picture for the sake of the narrative. Now, in 1980, or whenever that was, 79, 80, I didn't realize to do that was revolutionary, historical in the history of photography. Of course, before that, people had done that. When people had taken snapshots before that and said, oh, honey, move over to the left so you can look like you belong to your sister or your daughter or whatever. But this was different. This was for the sake of making a story, and I had no idea how radical that was. It was sort of like inventing the wheel without knowing that it was a big deal. And put her there, put him there to show how much space was between these family members. And I lined him up right down the middle, and this was I'm a very orderly person. This had to do with design. Now look at this picture here. You see this has the same composition? Can you see? You see there are these spaces here, just like these, looks like these. Now, I didn't think about when I took this, but when I edited the book, I thought about this. I forgot your original question. What was I trying to say? I told you it was going to take a while. And so I started telling people more and more, that's not a good example, to get closer to here. Now, what happened here is we went down to the beach. I had the 4x5. This is his niece. And this guy always would have a Frisbee down at the beach, and then we'd be throwing it together. And this is his other niece. He just happened to lean over and do that. Now, I had a 4x5, and I don't know if you know how to use that and what that camera is. But you've got to look through the ground glass upside down, focus it, then put the film in, which means you cannot see what's happening at the moment you're taking the picture. So if you see something like that, you'd never be ready. So I had to ask him to go do it again. That, again, was a very unusual thing to do. And it kind of was cheating. Because at this time, now have you studied the history of photography at all, you guys? Do you know who Gary Winogrand is? Lee Freelander? No. Street photographers. Which, at that time, black and white photographers, do you know who they are?
Yes.
Oh, okay, you're okay. They believed in telling the truth and in showing photographic truth, and that is you never altered what you saw out there in the world. And I broke that rule. I didn't think it was going to be such a big deal, but to have somebody go do something again was sort of like cheating. This wasn't the truth. This wasn't what was there. I did it again here. This became an accident. This is what people started seeing that was weird. Plus, these pictures are 5 feet by 4 feet. What was weird was I was using that camera that meant everything like here was in very, very crystal clear focus. If you took a 35 millimeter camera and blew it up 5 feet, it would be kind of soft and fuzzy. I had a 4x5. I used lights in this picture. All this is crystal clear because I wanted you to see all these little doodads to show how someone collected these. How, also, was this girl this baby? No. This baby was this woman, so handed down from generation to generation. But the thing that people couldn't believe is how natural this looked. And what made it natural was when I was asking her to hand her little girl to her brother, she did this by accident. So going back and seeing the results and editing them out, I would try to find the picture that really looked honest and real. So it's a combination of having an intention, having an idea in mind, and then technically pulling it off as far as the light, right amount of light in the picture, having the colors do something. See, this kind of thing matches. There's many things going on here that someone who makes a movie could plan or just creates a play or directs a play could do. But it was with the kind of camera I used that made it sort of a juggling act that was hard for people to believe. That's enough of that.
You mentioned Renaissance painting. I was wondering who else in photography around your time and the time that you began truly to get started, were you looking at and who you really kind of idolized?
I probably sort of worshipped everybody. I think, you know, my taste changed, too, from the very beginning, you know, as I sort of saw more photography and went on and my work changed. It's just such a feast, I can't even begin to realize. Do you know who Curtege is?
Mm-hmm.
Yay! Okay.
I wrote a paper on him, actually. Oddly enough.
Well, I think Curtege, for many reasons, but this is all, you can't do this in this short amount of time. This is very complicated. I hope you're going to go on. You sound like you're really serious. You have to go on, because I can tell. I've taught so many, I can tell in about 2 seconds if someone's serious or not. Tell your parents that I said that you're sorry.
I'm going to tell everybody. You have no idea.
You're going to brag. Okay, Curtege. I would say at that point, Cartier-Bresson, but only because of this decisive moment and the fluidity of how he did it. I mean, now I wouldn't probably be interested in his photographs. They're not complicated enough. They're not edgy enough. Because now I'm interested in more abstract photography that you can't really figure out what you're seeing. Okay, who else can we think of? Gary Winogrand. I think Lee Freelander is probably one of the geniuses of our time. And very few people understand his work. Probably my dealer, Janet, understands him more than anybody. And I probably understand maybe a fourth of what I see in his pictures. And what is very interesting is you're still talking about an 11 by 14 photograph in black and white with a 35 millimeter camera or something close to that. And I just think that proves the point is you don't have to go out and get a lot of fancy equipment to make an interesting picture. I think Cindy Sherman was pivotal for me. The first time I saw one of her photographs, it was like sort of seeing God, because I didn't know she existed. And I was trying to do certain things, and I can't remember even when that was. It was in the 80s, obviously. It was at the Walker in Minneapolis. And it was the one of her sort of on the kitchen floor. She's sort of looking up like that. But first of all, I had never seen a picture that big, you know, that wasn't a poster. But it was also so cinematic and drama and cinematic and dramatic and theatrical. And it just was, it was sort of like when you see a dress that you like and you say, oh, I want to have that too. That's how I felt. I want to do that too. I want to be like her. So that was important. And Nan Golden was very important to me. And, you know, I saw her work from the very beginning. And what I sort of like in a lot of, when I look at art, other art, is recognizing something that I can't do or that I don't do. And what Nan could do was she could be sloppy. And that's so against my nature. And here I'm using a 4x5 and thinking pretty hard about the way I was putting the photographs together. And I, you know, always wanted to be kind of sloppy and have things out of focus. And it's funny, I still haven't been able to do that. But I still, you know, would like to tend to even go that way. I still have time. That's enough, yeah.
Why was it that you decided to use just color, and how do you feel about black and white?
You know, I'm very conservative in the fact that I think that you should stick with not too many tools and really, really understand them very well. Therefore, I'm using the same camera that I have used since 1981, and the photographs are the same size, and they're still in color because I feel as if I haven't finished yet. Now, I have done black and white photographs, and I just started doing that in about 2002, and I'm very excited about making them. I haven't shown them, and the problem is that once you start getting, your work starts getting well known, people want you to keep doing what you've always done. And, I mean, I kind of don't care about that, but, it's very hard to break that system. And what's interesting about black and white, and I think it's something I could go on trying to figure out, and I don't think probably anybody's figured it out, is what happens to your brain when you look at a black and white photograph that's different from when you look at a color photograph. And I think about it, and I think about it, and I know I'm hooked on Turner Classics. When you go and you look at an old black and white movie, and you feel a certain way about that when you see it, and when you see a great one, something happens graphically in the design of the screen or of the photograph. It becomes more about design than about objects. You start thinking about things in an abstract way again. But the fact that you think and feel about them differently really interests me. And I'd like to go on. I tried to make pictures that were different in black and white, but I usually go back to the same thing. And in the slideshow tonight, I'm going to show some of those. So I think the color is so, you know, when you're in love with something, what could I... compare it to, well, chocolate ice cream instead of vanilla ice cream or something like that. Let me just say, what do you love? Let's say a certain song, or like you just want to hear it over and over again. I can think about that. I'll think about that tomorrow, but it's just like that. It's just like, oh, you know, I got to have some of that red or blue or, and I actually have a very hard time if I get an assignment, an editorial job or something, and it's in a white room. I just photographed Michael Stipe. Do you know who that is? You don't. Is he that old?
Oh, yeah.
Poor Michael. He knew that. Anyway, in a new modern hotel with white walls, and it was very difficult for me because there wasn't any color there.
So you've definitely mentioned that there's like all your pictures are as if they're telling a story. So do you try to put a kind of a sense of like a performance, like kind of a theatrical feeling to your pictures?
I don't try to do that.
But do you?
I don't try to do that, and I don't think about that. I'd say for this book, I was trying to, not to show reality, but I guess that's what it was. To say, this is really what's there, this is the truth, I want to show you that. I want to get as close to reality as I can. And that's why I love movies. Because you believe, they're so easy to believe. Because you're in that dark theater and the screen's big and you get into it and you just, you know, you feel as if you're there. And that's why I made the pictures big too. So you could feel as if you're in there. You could see every little, tiny little speck of everything. But I wasn't trying to be theatrical. And I've been put in that category a lot. And the book is called Theater of Manners. But there's a double sort of entendre to that word, that has a double meaning, that word theater, that this term theater of manners. But I did not want to do that. I did not want to do what Greg Crutzen does, which is, you know, going the other way, or PL, Philip Lorca de Corsia. If you don't know their work, those two guys, you should go look them up and see what those photographers look like to see the very big difference. Now, I have photographed theater, and that's a whole other body of work I've done that I'm going to do a book on. And I'm going to show those slides tonight, too. And this was to get up on the stage while theater is being performed. And I got to do it with one of, to me, the most interesting theater groups probably in the world, called the Worcester Group, who William Defoe belonged with. And it was like, you know, if you're a skier, it's like skiing in deep powder or... I can't think of anything else right now, but it was one of the most exciting experiences because it was like being right there in the play and then recording it. And technically, it was the Mac. It was the most complicated, difficult thing I've ever done, and it was a rush because of that. And that was, this is complicated now, this was because there was a crossover in the fact that I was photographing something theatrical that was supposed to be real. It's hard for me even to explain myself, but it was a little bit of everything mixed into one. It's hard for me to explain, which I like. You see, that's what I like, is not being able to explain what I'm doing. And this is why, and this is sort of the goal, is to, you know, for all these years I've been doing the same thing, and I don't believe in changing what you're doing for the sake of changing, but to not be able to explain that interests me. But I sort of pushed your question a little bit far.
It's okay.
Can you explain the use of self-portraits in your
photos? Oh, good question. If you look at the history of art, which if you're interested in art, I hope you do, I believe that the self-portrait is the most important work that most artists make. And you can prove that by looking at the auctions sort of prices and what things sell for and what things are in museums. But usually the self-portrait is the most valuable because it's a very complicated, interesting thing to do. And I think that everybody should try it and do it. And I also think what happens to your brain when you're doing it's very interesting because you're putting yourself on the other side of the camera And you're trying, I think what happens to me is I'm saying to myself, who am I? What the heck am I doing here? What do I look like? And what's interesting is the difference between photographing yourself, looking at that result, and looking in the mirror. And in a mirror, I just don't think you can see yourself. So it's probably the most interesting thing you can do.
Can I ask a selfish question? If you were going to give me one big piece of advice to make me a better photographer, what do you think that would be?
I think to make your work be about you. And the hard part about that is when you're young, is how do you know who the hell you are? Because I see so many students who really struggle with finding subject matter. And, you know, here I am at 190 years old, and I have trouble finding interesting subject matter. And I know, I mean, I don't know if you have a hard time finding subject matter. I sure hope you do, because some people are really lucky, and they find weird things, and, you know, they've got it made. But the main thing is to, and I think you should write it down, even though you might hate writing like I do, really write down what interests you and who you are. Not right now, you don't have to do it. What interests you and who you are. The other thing is, and because I was lucky enough to move away from my home at the age of 28, that's what made the difference for me, because it was sort of like being up in a parachute, looking down on my life, and try to remove yourself from yourself and your life. And I don't know if you get to travel in around the world, but if you do, that's a very good way to do it. And I know I went to Europe and photographed for 8 years, but these are the pictures that I, you know, people think of and are the most important pictures that I will ever take. And I think it's because I was able to step away from myself and say, oh my gosh, I had an unusual life. What I live in is very unusual. I don't think it's been recorded. And the other thing, I think most of the photography students that I meet with forget about America. And I think especially now, to record America from your point of view. Now, have you seen Paranoid Park?
I have not.
Okay, well, you should see that movie. I think Gus Van Sant,
mm-hmm.
And Elephant, you know, too. But the thing I'm so interested in that movie is he really gets America, the age of that guy or those kids, where they come from, in a way that there's no way I couldn't find it, I couldn't see it, I couldn't understand it unless I saw that movie. And so even though when you're as young as you are, your life, and most students' life most people's lives aren't that interesting, especially if you're an artist. You know, you wake up, you go make art, you come home, you may be teaching between them, but what is so interesting about that? So how are you going to ever make interesting pictures? But I think you have to look at it harder. And you know what, you even could go to friends and say, okay, what do you think I'm like? You know, you could, I mean, I never really thought about that, but you could try that. But I think that's the best thing you can do.
You mentioned before about how you wanted to get your family to realize how close they were, how not close they were, rather. Do you think that they, like, realized that and became closer after your photographs?
I get that asked all the time. No. No, I don't think so. But my family's very close anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it changed them. I mean, as I said, they didn't even look at the pictures. I mean, I think it's very hard to see the pictures of yourself and really understand what I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it changed them that much. But we were close anyway.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, we're saying a lot of people categorize your photos as being theatrical, and some photographers take pictures and they say it's just documentary. Have you ever thought of your pictures as being in a category?
Well, I don't want them to be. And I'm very lucky because somehow, because of the pictures I've taken, they are able to fit into many kind of concepts or shows, and sort of they seem to have different sort of interests in them. But I don't certainly want to put them into a category. No, let me just say one thing. I think that really my true love is anthropology. Sociology, anthropology, not anthropology, probably sociology. And I'm going to be in a show at Williams College that's about ethnicity and culture. And that interests me a lot, of why people are the way they are, and because of where they grew up and how they were brought up, they are the way they are. And that interests me more than anything. I keep on getting put into shows that are about either family or staged photography. And that's very narrow to me. And, you know, it's been done to death. So that category, and, you know, documentary sounds kind of dull to me, but in a way this is documentative, you have to admit. And the word documentary has changed a lot, too, since, you know, you could say that Robert Frank was a documentarian, but Robert Frank, do you know his one? Good. Robert Frank is...
These guys do, too.
Oh, good. So complicated. You know, and I was thinking of Walker Evans, because have you read Let Us Now... Oh, my God. Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, which is, to me, one of the best books of all time. And even if you read just a couple of pages, that's documentative and fantastic. It's actually not even really documentative, it's more than that, but anyway.
So, how do you, like, when it comes to your family and you want to photograph them, how do you exactly, like, convince them to be in your picture?
First of all, I don't photograph them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's done, you know, that's over. I think that no one will ever realize, ever realize that every single time I asked someone if I could photograph them, it was so hard to do. And it took every bit of courage I have. Now, we're talking about my sister, my brother, my kids, my best friends, because the fear of rejection, and I'm not that insecure a person, but there's something about someone saying no to me photographing them that is just crushing. And even if they said, no, I can't do it now because I've got to do this, that, and that, come back later, it's just debilitating. And I don't think anyone ever realized how hard it was for me. I mean, I would sit for maybe days, weeks, to think, okay, I'm going to call that person and ask them if I can photograph them. And it was hard. They'll never know. Because to them it was, you know, I never took more ever than an hour, which sounds like a lot, but that's very little to do what I did. I never did what Sally Mann did, were certain photographers to follow the family all summer. And I'm like, God, I could never do that. It was once a summer that I would do it. So I would just say, hey, can I come over? You know, I'm coming over. You know, and I'd bring the station wagon with 10 million pieces of equipment. So they knew that I was serious.
Mm-hmm. So was it easier to photograph strangers?
Yes. It was so much easier. And you know what's funny is, and that was in Europe, when I went to Europe. Mm-hmm. Do you have that book, The Europeans? Oh. I don't think you can buy it anymore. Mm. Anyway.
It was $300 on Amazon.
Oh, come on. Oh, God, that's sad. And you know what? The publisher wouldn't reprint it. Steidl doesn't like to do that. Anyway, The Europeans was, I went in 1996. I was so tired of photographing at home, and someone suggested I go to Italy and photograph. And so friends helped me find the people in Europe to photograph. So I went to Italy thinking it was a one-time shot for a month. Well, it ended up to take 8 years to do this book, and I went to 6 different countries for a month, mm-hmm. each fall for 8 years. 6 different countries. And what happened was, 2 friends in Italy, it sort of dominoed. They'd say, well, I have a cousin in Austria. Mm-hmm. And what happened then is that people started wanting to help me. And the dream was is that I get to that country, 3 to 4 months before I went there. Now, when I started, there was no email. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine, and no cell phones. Mm-hmm. When I went to Italy in 1996, all the mothers were using cell phones, and I was like, I couldn't even believe this machine, this new thing, and they were on their cell phones, driving their cars, picking up their babies, yabba yabba yabba, they called them telefoninis, and nini being small. Anyway, the email thing really helped because I could get organized before I went. And so people started organizing. When I got to that country, they'd give me a list and say, okay, at 6 o'clock you're going to photograph this person, and I would show up and there would be my dream without any emotional angst-ridden sort of stuff that I had done before. Mm-hmm. So it was much easier. Now, the only thing, the difference with that is I think that when you feel upset inside or when something's hard for you, the picture's going to be more profound. The word is angst. I don't know if you've heard that word before, but angst being, I don't even know the translation, but basically it means upset, you know. I wish we had a dictionary right here. But anyway, angst-ridden means, oh, God, you know, gloom and doom, things are going to happen. Oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. But anyway, I hate to say that you have to be that upset to take a good picture, but probably, you know, like in everything in life. So, yes, it was easier to photograph strangers.
Do you have a favorite European country, city?
Well, each country I photographed in was different. And I think it has a lot to do with language, too, because I speak a little bit of French and Italian. And Spain, I could understand. And Germany, I didn't speak German, and that made it more difficult, even though my assistant was German. And that makes a big, big difference. And Paris, the colors were more fantastic where I was, and the English are very funny and a blast. So it all depends on who you know and what happens to you there. But visually, probably England and France were the easiest to photograph for me. And, you know, I've been to Vietnam, I've been to China, China's very difficult, was very difficult. You want to go there?
I was actually scheduled to go this May, but because of the entire country's kind of imploding, we can't go anymore, which is, it's too bad, but, you know.
That was a good decision.
Yeah.
Well, what happened was I went to China in 1983, it was very primitive then. And I went back there because I wanted to really record this dramatic transition that's happening now. But it was so westernized, I was crushed. I could have been in L.A. I tried desperately to find something Chinese that was left, and it was very hard.
How do you, like, balance working and taking care of your family and making art at the same time?
You should ask my kids that. first of all, when I started making photographs, I was living in that ski resort, and life is so easy there because there was no fear of your children getting kidnapped or hurt or something terrible happening to you. And you could just let them outside, and they'd be fine. You could find babysitters because all the ski bums there wanted to, you know, babysit. So life was very easy. And while they were in school, I would take pictures. And so I think if you ask them, I was always home. I always got up from the morning. I'm a very organized person. I always, you know, made their lunch. I always made dinner, vacuumed, cleaned, did everything else. So I feel as if I did balance it well. But I think living in that place had a lot to do with it. And, you know, I certainly did a lot of photography. But luckily the timing was right, because just in 83, when these pictures started getting shown, they were off in boarding school, and they were gone. So the timing was right. But there also, I really knew that I didn't want to have nothing to do. And I say in the movie, I said the fear of getting up and having nothing to do was so terrifying to me that if I hadn't found photography, I would have done something else. And I sort of, I'm so organized, I plan for the future. I knew that I was going to not have much to do when my kids went to school, so I knew I wanted to do something.
Is there anything that you want to do right now, but just can't get to it?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to draw and paint. And I've been doing that by myself, sort of like a closet sort of painter, all along. And so, and I know that eventually that I won't be strong enough to do what I do, because it does take a lot of strength, even though I have an assistant. So I'm sort of saving that. But I think that I sometimes think about the photojournalists that are out there photographing Darfur and places like that, and I think, if I had another life, and that is a very sort of silly thing to say, because they're not the kind of pictures that interest me. Mm-hmm. But I admire, you know, war photographers and that kind of photographer very much, and I'm just too much of a wuss. I just couldn't do it. And I think, you know, I'd like to be a musical comedy star, and I'd like to sing on Broadway, but, you know, not in this lifetime.
Did anyone ever tell you that your photos were bad, or, like, they didn't like them? And, like, how did you deal with that, if they ever did?
Well, they did. They didn't say they were bad, but when you first start getting reviewed, it's very scary, because you always hope for a review, and that's one of the goals of is of getting reviewed. But in the beginning, when people first saw my work, because I had a show at Museum of Modern Art, a one-person show in 1990, and that was quite early for me. And then the reviews started coming in, and I was so deeply upset, because they kept talking about the rich people in the pictures. And it was such, I don't know how I could have been so naive to not have realized that that's what people were going to look at. Because I was so interested in the family and the family relationships. I just was so clueless to think that this was going, and still to this day, I'm called the person who photographs the rich. And that's sort of, you know, to me, I've gotten used to it. I've kind of gotten numb to it. And I'm, you know, I want to say, you know, that's a stupid thing to say, but then it hurt my feelings. And then when they went on and started to criticize or started to describe some of the things, if they ever called someone fat or if they ever saw someone's wrinkles, that would just, because I was so protective of the people in the pictures, and it was scary to me. And it took a lot of courage to keep on after I read those reviews, because it made me very much more afraid of what was going to happen as far as the critics. And people have... they've been pretty kind. Maybe my dealer doesn't show me the bad reviews. I don't know. They've been very kind. But, you know, I've gotten so much good response that the one or two or three bad ones sort of don't affect you. And, you know, as you become professional, those kind of things sort of disappear. What was really also scary is I used to started lecturing publicly right in the beginning. And, one of the things that just devastated me, and then I got used to, is this one picture in here with a black woman making the bed of my sister. And I would do a lecture, and someone would get up in the audience and attack me verbally about making racially biased pictures. And I was so clueless. I was so naive. I mean, the picture was about the love of this woman, you know, in the family, and how beautiful she was, and I was just very naive. So that kind of thing would happen, and then I got used to it. Okay. Well, thank you very much. You had very good questions. Very good. You did your homework.